But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The worldwide web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Advice Show. I'm Jack Gilbert, editor of New Model Advisor, and I'm joined today by senior reporter Victoria Bell. Today, we're going to be talking about all things platform transfers. We have looked into this issue in a piece which was published last week on the site and found some providers are putting up barriers that are delaying transfer processes. And generally, advisors are not very happy with how transfers are working in the marketplace. You can check that piece out on the NMA site. Today, we're joined by Howard Finnegan, head of product sales at Equisoft and the leading industry expert on platform transfers. Hi, Howard.
Hi, Jack. Hi, I think you've oversold me there, but that's okay.
Hi, Howard. So you've been working on platform and pension transfers for many years. What's changed in the last 10 years?
Hi, Victoria. Hi. The biggest single change happened with the introduction of the electronic transfer process, which actually I think the first electronic transfer was an ISA transfer that happened in early 2012. And this is electronic transfers that are enabled through two things. One is the text legal framework, which is run by TISA, but is owned as a separate company and is owned by all the members. There are about 200 members and about 430-odd brands across the advisor platform, custodians, wealth managers, and fund managers are all use this framework to facilitate, this legal framework to facilitate electronic transfers. That was the biggest single thing. Prior to that, some of the platforms, used to be termed as the old fund supermarkets, they didn't do any in specie transfers. You had to sell everything to move. And the FCA, as part of the retail distribution review legislation that came in 2012, 2013, they said you have to do in specie transfers. And they said to the industry, if you don't do them quickly and efficiently, we will start writing COBS rules to say how long it should take. So TISA set up TECs and tackled the legal framework. And there's a group called the UK Electronic Transfer and Re-Registration Group, UK ETRG, which sets the technical framework for all these things, the electronic messaging. And it's an open standard. You can get solutions from ourselves at Equisoft. You can get solutions from Origo, from Actuaire, from Calistone. And some clients, some of the organizations build the thing themselves and they connect to the market practice, the open standard. That was the biggest single thing. Prior to that, everything was done on paper. Everything. And when we're talking about moving from one advisor platform to another advisor platform, there are lots of counterparties involved. It's a complicated value chain that can involve the platform itself. The platform might use a custodian, a sub-custodian, and then the custodian would talk to the fund manager. And that was the biggest single leap. It was the great leap forward, as we might say, back in 2012, 2013. Since then, there have been incremental changes that made things a little bit better. The text legal framework and contract club also includes SLAs for each part of the process. Each part of a process between the different counterparties in the supply chain, they have typically about one working day or perhaps two working days to complete their bit. So, you know, if everybody's linked up and everybody's wired up, in specie transfers should be fairly easy and quick. And for the most part, individual assets, they are. The thing that's really the other improvements we've had since 2013 is the technical standards have evolved and they've started to include more things, and that is more wrappers. So it was originally ISAs and GIAs, then it was JISAs, and then it introduced pensions, and now we're going LISAs and IFISAs and so on. So that's continually changing. And when pensions came in, it was primarily one type of pension, SIPs, but that's been expanded for GPPs, DC arrangements, and very recently, like June this year, the legal framework and the technical framework's been changed to allow DB transfers, which is a new development. So it's continually evolving, these little incremental changes. On the asset side, it was just funds and cash to begin with. And now, I can't remember the exact date, 2015, 2016, they introduced anything that could be settled on CREST. So equities, investment trusts, any bonds, any asset that could be settled on CREST, CTFs and so on. So, and in the advisor platform world, you know, I don't know what the numbers are, 95%+ of their assets would be UK domicile funds and stuff that can be settled on CREST, assets, that, ETFs or investment trusts that can be settled on CREST. And that's been the big increase, the incrementals. The one thing that's a bit disappointing, I think, personally, has been a bit disappointing is that, you know, the SLAs.
Sorry, how do you say SLA, you mean?
Service level agreements. These are the time that the individual counterparties in the value chain have to complete their part of the transfer.
Yeah.
The SLAs have not changed since 2012, which you would have thought, as more and more people get connected and as systems get better and so on, that we may have fine-tuned those SLAs to perhaps make it a little bit better. So 2012, 2013 was a big leap forward. Then there's been small incremental improvements. But, you know, to an advisor, they probably noticed in recent years, most of the advisor platforms use electronic transfers of some shape or other. The complication and the issues resolve around, there's a whole lot of issues around pension transfers, and we could do a whole program on that if you like.
There's a series.
And then a whole series, yeah, we could have to do this, maybe a few seasons even. The other thing that delays in specie transfers is assets that cannot be manual counterparties in the chain. So in the value chain, if everybody's electronic and they're all using solutions that, you know, conform to the open standards, to text and so on, it should work pretty well. I mean, it could probably be a bit quicker, but you're probably looking at, typically, if everybody's lined up in this and it's not too complicated, you're probably looking at 10 to 14 days to complete a wrapper plus in specie.
For a SIP.
Not for a SIP. No, SIPs are more complicated. For ISA GIAs, ISAs particularly, the issue is that you just need one person in the chain not to be electronic and the whole thing slows down. So everything happens at the slowest pace of the slowest person in the chain. Actually, it was the wealth manager. But so the advisors would probably set expectations to be, you know, 2 to 3 weeks to the client. The Tex Contract Club, all Tex members have to provide MI, SLA, standard, you know, data on how quick they do things to Tex every month. And so Tex over the last 10 or 12 years has lots of information about how long things take and for all the different parts of the process. However, the Tex Contract Club is owned by its members. It's called Article of Association. It's like its constitution. And to make a change to the constitution, you have to get a super majority of the members. A few years ago, I think about 6 years ago, they tried to change the Tex language to allow the publication of MI. Because the original language said, no, you can't publish any information whatsoever. And unfortunately, that just missed its supermajority by 1%. It got 74% and 75%. Yeah, very close. So,
why was there support for publishing transfer times? Was it because there was concerns over some slow people dragging their feet on the transfers?
The reason why, my personal view is publishing MI, there's ways you can publish information that anonymizes it and doesn't sort of, you know, pick on people or, you know, name and shame and all that sort of stuff. There's ways you can do it. And they do, if we look at the other transfer, electronic transfer service that's quite useful, is used in the banks. So the banks have a cash ISA transfer service that's run by Pay UK. It was set up actually same time, 2012. They have, and it's governed by the PRA and the banking authorities, and actually ties are also involved in that one. And they have very explicit MI that they produce. It's very useful MI, but it's really targeted towards consumers. One of the biggest problems for that slows things down is assets getting transferred. That's one thing. So it just takes one asset. And typically, if you look at things, again, like SIPs, Jack, you were asking about SIPs, advisor SIPs tend to have an MPS or a DFM proposition in them. And DFMs tend to like to have two things which cause problem with transfers. One is they very often have preferential share classes.
Yeah.
So they have special deals with the fund managers that may not be available to all platforms. So then to do an in-specie transfer, you have to do a share class conversion. And not everybody, there is an electronic standard for that as part of text and everything, but not everybody supports electronic share class conversions.
Not every platform.
Both from the, not every platform.
Even a lot of platforms have been basically telling platforms.
I'm sorry. I should correct that. I'm going to get them all into trouble now with the FCA. I won't. They do share class conversions, but they don't do them electronically.
Okay.
They do them and they treat them as a corporate action. So it goes to the corporate action department, and the corporate action department then does all sorts of things, not just share class conversions. It does vote. It's all sorts of things. And it tends to do things on a weekly or monthly cycle. The other thing I'd say about SIPs is SIP to SIP in specie is a lot of the SIP wrapper vendors or administrators, not all of them have adopted electronic, certainly the open standard stuff for SIP to SIP in specie. So if everything at the sort of highest level of the transfer process requires wet signatures and paper and all
and
that
slows
sort of stuff,
things down a lot. That's the
a lot. A lot, yeah. The biggest single issue with SIPs, because it's such a can be such a complicated sort of value chain, you're more likely to get one counterparty that is not electronic, one or more, and then everything goes at the speed of the paper.
Is there any way, you know, that you said that SIPs are complicated? Do you see that changing in the next few years?
Yeah. And the reason being is that, you know, any good advisor platform worth its salt has its own SIP on the platform. So in the past, you would get a platform that would offer a SIP, but the SIP wrapper was a third-party wrapper. So there was, it wasn't there, and it wasn't on their technology. It wasn't on their in their estate, as it were. They didn't have SIP permissions using third-party permissions. And that's just a massive disconnect. The biggest single change, and this is probably since, you know, pension freedoms, basically, let's be honest, 2015, 16, 17 onwards, most of the platforms have built SIP capability into their platform. So it takes out, you know, one of those value chain layers. And, you know, and as we've probably seen over the years, some of these outsourced SIP providers, they've had issues because
a lot of them got bust, haven't they, right?
Well, they've had FCA fines. So, you know, because they didn't have control of the assets. So and there was dodgy assets going in. So, you know, Gaudi more recent is fairly recent. Greyfriars, there's
been,
a wake of them.
Dozens,
loads of them. So the biggest single thing is putting the SIP on the putting the SIP on the platform. It's fully integrated. It has its direct connection with the assets. It's just makes things a lot easier and a lot quicker.
Now, Howard, if we're like an advisor listening to this podcast, I think our general feeling is that platform transfers are huge. They're a huge undertaking that are incredibly painful, that are going to take a long time to do, that will often mean advisors will actually, because of this, the worry about doing them, they'll actually encourage them, they'll actually do them as cash transfers rather than in specie, because they'll know that this could take a lot longer if they're doing it as in specie, for a number of the reasons that you've been outlining to us. And a lot of advisors will get annoyed at providers because they'll see the providers putting up barriers or being difficult with it. What do you think the providers need to do to change to make things better? And do you think there's an element that providers have been dragging their feet with this in order, you know, for commercial reasons? Like our piece, we talked about people, industry people saying providers dedicating more resources to transfer in teams than transfer out teams. So, I mean, do you think there is a
connection? Right, you've asked me a rake of questions there. Let me just take them one by one. Even when you have everybody in the chain electronic, one of the biggest things that slows them down is something called rejections. So, you know, you could argue it's like computer says no. But what happens is this: all these computers talk to one another. If the source data is wrong, if the data is incorrect, it's the most common reason for rejections.
So the account number.
And the most account number, investor details, NINOs, date of births, addresses, whatever. And, you know, advisors typically they start that data chain. So they set up an account for a client, and then they say, I want to transfer from a seeding platform. And they put in the seeding platform details, but they're very often not correct. And in a way, advisors are setting, and then the minute that starts an electronic chain and it hits the first barrier and it gets rejected, the seeding provider says, you know, I don't recognize the account number, or I don't recognize the investor, because the investor details we have are incorrect, and it could be a NINO, it could be a date of birth, it can be addressed. You know, people, you know, particularly pensions, people change names and, you know, get married and move house and all sorts. So it's really up to the advisors to check that they have the information, the correct, the investor's information correct, and the seeding, the account details at the seeding provider. Because the seeding provider, because the computer's checking these things, yeah, and if the account numbers or whatever don't match, it just goes back and says rejection. Now, Text are doing a lot of work in this area and have done some fantastic work recently. So we have in our system, for example, all the people on text now have to say what their account number formats look like. So if I'm transferring from a seeding provider and it's two alpha, it's AB, number, alphanumeric, I can at least check that the format that the advisor's keyed in or the end client has keyed in is correct. Or I can go back and say, no, this doesn't look right for that provider. And that's helped a lot. Because I think the most common rejection reason is invalid account number. And you would, if it's you know, an advisor that gets a new client, and the client is moving advisor, and as part of that, the advisor is moving platforms, moving the client's wrappers and assets from between platforms, you know. Some of the physical statements people get, the printed statements, they deprecate account numbers for security reasons, perhaps. And very commonly, you know, we'll see an account number that is XXXXX and four numbers. And, you know, they've read a statement and followed what it says, account reference or account number, and they put in the deprecated character. So if advisors could really check the data, then they would help themselves and things would run a lot more smoothly, and they wouldn't then have to get the platforms, you know, teams involved to go check things, because they've got to go back to the advisor and say this is wrong, and then the advisor may have to go back to the client and all sorts. So getting that data right up front is really critical, and advisors can help there. The other question about platforms making it difficult, I think that happens. The one thing I would address, first of all, is, most, not all, but a lot of platforms spend far more money and resources to automate ins. It's an easy business case to go to your exec and say, give me all this money. I'm going to make ins, transfer ins, completely seamless. And they're going to, you know, they're going to be everything. We're going to put in all the technology and all the resources to make ins fly. And doing that business case for outs is difficult. The issue is your in process can be as fantastic as the best in the world. However, if the seating provider is not as efficient and has manual processing, because even when you get electronic messaging going around behind the scenes, you know, they're rekeying stuff and there's lots of manual interventions here, there and everywhere, which just slows everything down. The other thing about any sort of manual intervention is that manual interventions just don't scale. Whereas if it's completely automated, integrated, systems talking to systems, whether they do 100 transfers in a day or 1,000 is just the amount of electricity they use. It doesn't mean they need an extra 10 people to do it. So that's the other thing. Some platforms, and I'm not going to name, Jack, you advised me before this not to name platforms,
it's do okay, a we'll really good job. Later, it's fine. We'll put
them in. Some platforms have spent a lot of money on automation, both ins and outs, and they have very efficient, but they suffer then from the platforms who haven't.
So you're always as weak as the weakest chain, basically, whether it's the
fund manager, custodian, SIP wrapper provider, SIP admin. That's the issue again. Even the electronic people who have electronic systems for outs, some have, you know, fairly clunky back office, you know, half integrations or part integrations. It's not as seamless as the front end. It's interesting, in the D2C world, direct execution world, it's quite common for those platforms or brokers to spend money on the out because they deal with the client directly, and those sort of clients in the D2C world, they're a bit more fickle. They move around a bit more. And what they say, if the client has a good experience on the way out, you know, we'll get them back. They'll come back. But in the direct execution world, you can. You know, you might move bank accounts or ISA provider quite regularly. And in the cash ISA world, they get huge flows of transfers. I mean, millions, because you know it's all based on how value. So one bank could offer an extra 25 bips on their cash ISAs, and they'll get a huge flow. And that's happening at the moment. Actually, they're all offering really good rates, and people will move for 25 to 50 bips.
Do you think the FCA should be stepping in more to kind of make sure that platforms are putting money into transfer out teams?
It's a great question, and I'm given that a lot of the platforms are my customers. I'm probably going to get myself into trouble here. I've always thought the industry could sort itself out, particularly with the whole TEX framework. It's a brilliant framework. They could sort of use that to sort of encourage people and monitor them, and you know. But it hasn't worked. I mean, it's done a great job, but it hasn't made anything. It's improved things, but it's steady state. I think I've come to the conclusion after 14 years in electronic transfers, that I think the regulator needs to probably step in and be a bit more hands-on is probably the best way to say it, and possibly even get to a point where it's not just a principle-based, it's a bit more directive, and dare I say it, we might even have to have a COB rule or two that might make things a bit... I mean, they've had a look at this a couple of times.
2019.
FCA, making transfers simply. They had two things to do and they only did one of them, which was one, to get rid of exit fees. Well, most advisor platforms don't charge exit fees. It's really only in the wealth management and direct execution world you see you see exit fees really. And then they said, still one or two in the wealth manager world is still fairly prevalent. But yeah, in the direct execution, it's less so. Share class conversions was an issue. It was always an issue with RDR because of, you know, direct advisor charging and then the fund providers trying to sort of buy distribution. Share class conversions is an issue, but it wasn't the main issue. And even today, people do share class conversions, but they do them on paper. And they do them as part of a corporate action, and they take weeks or months to do them, and it slows everything down. So I'm not sure that the intent of the paper was good, but I'm not sure the results have been anywhere near what we expected. There's still lots of people not, even there are even fund managers who don't do electronic transfers, and say when we talk to them, they say, oh, we don't get, nobody's demanding it, platforms aren't demanding it, advisors aren't demanding it, so we just treat them as corporate actions and we do them once a month. And we go, not in the spirit of the FCA paper, but so I think the FCA should take a closer look. I think they should possibly even get to a point where they say, you know, you have timescales. You know, you have to, the maximum amount of time you have is 30 days. And if you don't do it, then you have to either, you have these, I mean, there will be get outs, particularly with some types, some asset classes only trade once a month or price once a month. So you might have get outs for a particular type of assets. But I do think they need to take a bit of a more of a hands-on approach to force this a little bit. And Victoria, that would then people would, because the people who are going to be measured are the people transferring out, not the people transferring in. Mm. That you, most of the measurement is on what you execute on when you're moving something out.
Well, guys, on that note of Howard calling for FCA direct action to make platforms work better for everyone, I think that's drawn us to the end of the episode. So thank you so much for listening. I'm Jack Gilbert at NMA. I've been joined by Victoria Bell and Howard Finnegan from Equisoft. For any questions, please feel free to tweet us at Neimoyle Advisor, email us at nma@cty.co.uk. Check out the story we did on platform transfers on the NMA site. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all again next week.
Apollo 11 has
tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.